is the afternoon of February 19th, and that is a significant date. If I have my math right, about 35 years ago, Roy Smalley was traded from the White Sox to the Twins. Let's talk to Roy about that on Roy Smalley's Chin Music, part of TalkNorth.com. Please follow us on Twitter at TalkNorthPod to see all the shows as they come out. We have a number of shows, sports and outdoor related, all across the network. Thank you for listening. Roy, what do you remember about February 19th, 1985?
Oh, man, what a great day that was for me. To just a little background, I played in New York for the Yankees for 2.5 years. Things got really crazy in New York. George Steinbrenner was manic at the time. He was platooning guys all over the field. And I kind of got fed up with things. And I requested a trade. They traded me to the White Sox for the second half, the last couple of months of the 84 season. And we had come back up here. I bought a townhouse in Minnesota just to give my wife, you know, my wife had been moving all over the place. In 3 years, she'd gone from Minnesota to New York and then to, you know, renting a place in Chicago downtown. And I said, you know what, I'm just going to buy a townhouse and let her hang out, have a home base in Minnesota where her family is and all of that. And one day in January of 85, Howard Fox called me up, the former general manager, vice president for the Twins, and said, hey, we're making a deal for you with the White Sox, and it's not going to be announced for a while. We got a bunch of details to work out. So we were ecstatic. I actually went to Florida. It went to Orlando where the Twins trained. I think it was last year they trained there in Orlando, Tinker Field in Orlando. 87 was, sorry. And this was 85. I went down there and sat every day at the pool with my kids, waiting for the news that the deal would get done. Billy Gardner was the manager. He'd come by the pool after the work, you know, after some guys were working out. And talk to me about where he wanted me to hit in the lineup and different things. I'm just hanging out, waiting, you know, hoping that something doesn't fall through. And sure enough, on February 19th, 35 years ago, I got traded officially. And two and a half years later, coincidentally on my 35th birthday, we won the World Series here. So it was February 19th, 35 years ago, a pretty great day for the Smalley clan.
Thanks to our producer, Brandon Morton, and our sponsors, Aquarius Home Services, Minnesota Propane Association, Kowalski's, and Manscaped. The promo code for Manscaped is ATHLETIC if you want to get 20% off. And if you'd like to advertise with this show or this network, as so many people are doing these days, you can reach Karen Cleary at KCLEARY at TalkNorth.com. And wherever you listen to us, rate us, rave about us, rip us, whatever you like. All right, I want to talk about Brian Dozier, but I also want to talk about, you know, you were a power-hitting shortstop, and, you know, you made pretty good money, but you didn't make $340 million, Roy. What do you, and I actually want to kind of awkwardly combine these two stories. Brian Dozier announced his retirement this year. Brian had three really outstanding seasons for the Twins. He desperately wanted a large, long-term contract to stay with the Twins. The Twins chose not to sign him to it, and Brian went on to a career where he was, you know, a useful extra player, won a World Series with the Nationals, and now he's decided to retire at a relatively young age, much earlier than we would have expected. And here you have a 22-year-old, Fernando Tatis Jr., signing for 16 years, $340 million, well before he would have ever been eligible for free agency. I don't know if these two stories go together or not, but I find it a fascinating juxtaposition that one player can make that kind of money, even with something of an uncertain future, where a guy who had performed couldn't get any kind of a large contract.
Strange times in Major League Baseball, no question about it. And I've had a lot of people stop me and say, so why is it that veteran players, the guys that really would have had a lot of experience, it seems like would really be of value to the club, you know, can't get a job? And today someone asked me about Dozier in that context, and it is interesting. It has an awful lot to do with the budgetary constraints that everybody has, and if the veteran presence really needs to be one of high contribution on the field, or they're going to, or teams are going to get a younger guy that will play for major league minimum. You know, imagine Brian might have been able to get a job for the major league minimum, right? And then somebody would have had a great deal. And for Brian, and you know, understandably, that's, you know, why would he do that? At some point in time, it's time to move on. And I think this was earlier, as you say, for Brian than maybe he or any of the rest of us expected. But sometimes the market tells you, where you're at, and or where you're going to be within the next year or two, it's time to move on. Tatis is a fascinating signing for those kind of numbers, so they didn't have to pay him anywhere close to that for several years. And so your question is a good one. Why would they pay him for the next 3 years at, the 20-some million level when they didn't have to, and then just sign him later? And why 14 years? Well, 14 years makes sense from arithmetic. He'll only be 36 at the end of the deal, mm-hmm. and probably be, productive the whole time. But the question is not, how old will he be at the end? The question is, I this is what's fascinating to me. If they're willing to spend 20 some million for 14 years, they're pretty convinced. There's two things that I'm wondering about. A, they're pretty convinced that that's going to be a bargain in about year 8, 9, or 10, mm-hmm. right? And I mean, otherwise, why would you do it? Second of all, then what are they thinking about where the game and salaries are going for good players if that's going to end 8 years, 10 years, 12 years, whatever they're paying him is going to be a bargain? They extracted, I would expect, some kind of discount. Now, whether it was in their minds where they said, we'd like to have him for a long term. By the time he's 30, he's going to be so good, it's going to cost us, $40 million a year instead of 20 some. Let's just wrap him up. Let's make the gamble and wrap him up. I don't even know if Tatis and his agent would have any idea what the discounted rate for 8, 10, 12 years from now would be. So I think the Padres are just saying, we're going to make a statement to our fans. We're going to make a statement to our best player. And we think that we're probably paying a lot now, but it will pale in comparison to what he'll make in 6, 8, 10 years. I just think that's fascinating.
Yeah, there's another angle to this I want to get to, because it's always easy to say what the negatives are for a long-term contract, and we've seen plenty of long-term contracts not work out very well, but there are some benefits. Let's continue talking about that and also do some remembrances of Brian Dozier. We do want to thank our sponsors, Aquarius Home Services and the Minnesota Propane Association.
Do you ever find yourself neglecting your heating and cooling systems? What about your water treatment system? My friends over at Aquarius Home Services in Connecticut offer convenient and cost-saving customer care plans that will leave you worry-free and give you peace of mind in your home. They make maintaining your equipment easy, offering great plans for your water treatment and heating and cooling systems. You don't have to worry about lugging bags of salt or when to get your furnace or AC tune-up. Aquarius just takes care of it all for you. I learned this the other day. They call you to schedule when you are due to have your service completed. It couldn't be easier. I learned that last week when they called me and told me it was time to have my water softener maintained. I didn't have to lug the bag of salts. Jake came out to my home earlier this week and did it all. So visit AquariusHomeServices.com for more details. And also, here is a message from my personal State Farm agent, Tony Hoagland.
Hey, I'm Laura Shera, and did you know, according to the Environmental Protection Agency Energy Star program, that propane is almost 3 times more efficient than grid electricity? We all care about our planet, so let's use energy efficiently to reduce our environmental footprint. You can heat your homes, your water, your cabins, your businesses with propane. The right energy right now. Propane, clean American energy. For more information, go to propane.com.
So the gut reaction whenever Sonny sees a deal like this is the team's crazy, right? But as you said, there, I mean, if Major League, I mean, contracts and contract values only go up, you know, no matter how much owners complain about player salaries, they always raise them over time because they're they have the money and they are inherently competitive and they want the star players. So, you know, Tatis, as you said, at some he's going to make $24 million a year prorated. At some point, that might look like a huge bargain.
These guys, the owners and general managers of teams are not dummies. They didn't just pick 14 years and prorated $24 million a year out of thin air. They were looking at what a player of his caliber might make next year or the year after that. They're speculating, projecting what a player of his talent would be in his prime, if his prime means, you know, another 4 or 5 years like most people, and he can actually get better than this. They're speculating about what he could make then. They're just eliminating all of the variables about what they'd have to pay and to keep him from even thinking about seeing what the free market at some point in time in 5, 6, 8 years would be. They didn't pick those numbers out of thin air. They did some cost of money calculations and said, you know what, let's just wrap him up.
And he's going to make about $1 million a year more than Joe Mauer made when he signed his big deal. And Joe Mauer signed coming off an MVP season as his team was opening up a new ballpark and he had all the leverage in the world. So, you know, I mean, this really could end. I mean, he's got to stay healthy. He's got to be productive. The team's got to win. Otherwise, you don't want to be paying one guy just to help you get to 70 wins or whatever. There are certainly pitfalls here, but I do see the logic of it. And, you know, and listen, the Twins got hammered when they didn't offer Brian Dozier a long-term contract. You know, frankly, the Twins ended up looking pretty good in that long term, being cautious about giving out a long term contract.
They absolutely did. It didn't hurt them at all, as it turned out, not to sign Brian for a longer term deal. And as you mentioned, you know, Brian had three unbelievable years in a row for the Twins. Did not get a long term contract and was, to your point, at best a part-time utility player at two other clubs. And so it's just, you never know with players. That was one of the quicker skill sets falling off the table, falling off the cliff that I've seen. It went from, you know, Brian being a Gold Glove, All-Star, 50 home run hitter, second baseman, to not being able to get to find a job. And sometimes it happens. It could happen with Tatis at some point in time. I kind of doubt it.
Yeah. He's got the lightning bat speed. He's got the athletic body. He plays a premier position. He's exactly talented. He's productive at a young age. He's already looked like he likes the limelight. With Dozier, you know, the thing, I always felt like there's an internal, debate constantly going on in the Twins organization. Brian wanted to sit on pitches and drive them and be a home run hitter. And, you know, I always heard whispers around the cage, around the organization. He might have better long-term success if he'd be a gap power guy who still hit home runs, but who hit doubles, hit 300, had a high on base percentage and uses speed. But, you know, you know, the hitting coaches and spend much more time around the cage than I do. How did you see all that playing out?
I think it's more to your point there than any other way. On a personal note, Brian drove me crazy. Watching him do, as you know, I mean, you and I probably have talked about this, you know, both on this show a few years ago and a lot and privately. And when Brian was playing his best, he'd hit some home runs to right center and center field. He'd get some base hits to right field. He hit for a higher average and still hit a lot of home runs. And he became so, I started worrying when he was using a line that Willingham gave him when they were teammates, and I thought this is going to be a problem for Brian, and he quoted Willingham as telling him, look, the shortest distance over the fence is to your pull field. That's mm-hmm. where you want to hit it, right? And I thought, oh man, this is going to be a mess. And you're right. Brian would sit on pitches, or he would look from the middle of the plate in at all times. And look, there's a time to do that, and it can even be a majority of the time. But there are other times when, either with two strikes or when a pitcher's just not going to give in to you, a really good hitter is going to be a guy that instead of 40 to 50 home runs, hits 30 and drives in a bunch with a whole lot of doubles. And Brian could have been that hitter. I believe it with all my heart he could have been that hitter. But he got in the habit of wanting to whip everything to straightaway left field. And it really, I will always believe it really hurt him.
Big picture, he was a great guy to have around. His relationship with Eduardo Escobar was really endearing. He really kind of took care of Eduardo, and Eduardo ended up having a nice career himself. And, you know, listen, you're not going to win every year. And whether you're a teammate or a media member or a manager or whatever, it's nice to have some people around the clubhouse you can actually have a good conversation with.
Brian was a terrific guy, is a terrific guy. And he had a great personality with his teammates. He had a great personality with the media. He was just a good guy to have on a team. He didn't act selfish at all. I mean, you could make a case for saying that the way he wanted to hit was a bit, if not selfish, a little overly self-focused in terms of, you know, what kind of player he wanted to be. But I don't see that as selfish as much as I just think he was a bit misguided about that, because I think he could have been all-star caliber offensively, at least for a lot of years. He'll hang his hat on the fact, what was his total? Did he hit 50 home runs?
I think 42.
42. Okay, so he hit 42 home runs, and he'll hang his hat on that. You know, there's not the second baseman don't hit 42 home runs. You know, for the most part, and he'll be real proud of that, and should be. He hit 42 home runs and win a Gold Glove. He was a terrific player. I just think he could have been whatever's more than my definition of terrific is for a longer period of time.
Let's talk about Matt Shoemaker and spring training. We do want to thank Manscaped. Manscaped.com. Use the promo code ATHLETIC to get 20% off. It's a male grooming device. It's called the Lawnmower. It's just very easy to use, very comfortable. I highly recommend it. I've used it myself. So has John Krasinski and other people across the network. We also want to thank Kowalski's. I know Anthony LaPanta spends about half of his paycheck at Kowalski's every week.
Hi, it's Anthony LaPanta, play-by-play man for the Minnesota Wild and co-host of the Worst Seats in the House podcast. When not focused on hockey, I love to spend my free time in the kitchen. Before we prepare a great meal, I always like to get my supplies at Kowalski's. They're the best in the Twin Cities when it comes to fresh meat. Personally, I love the Akiyushi steak line. It's as good as you can get in the Twin Cities. I also love their fresh fish selection, and the knowledge behind the counter is second to none. It's a great spot for your fresh produce. It's always worth the trip wherever you are to get yourself to Kowalski's. When it's time to have a great meal, you might as well start with the best products. I do my shopping at Kowalski's, and I recommend you do too. It's Kowalski's, the joy of good food.
So Matt Shoemaker, you view him as kind of just a make-good spring training guy, somebody who's likely to be the fifth starter. Where do you slot him?
I think he's likely. I really do. I think this is a really interesting signing for me. He's got a chance because I understand his velocity ticked up just a little bit last year, and if that's the result of him being healthy, you know, he's had such an awful career, injury riddled career, and that's where the big obviously the big gamble is, you know, can he, at least for 1 year, can he stay healthy and pitch the way that I think he knows how to pitch? But it's intriguing because of his stuff and because of what he's done in the past. When he was healthy, He was one of the better pitchers in the league, and mm-hmm. certainly not just a fifth starter for somebody. He was much more advanced in the rotation than that. Sub four ERAs and all that kind of stuff. You know, swing and miss guy with his splitter, and the splitter is the key. He's had when he was healthy, he had a great split finger changeup, and I am a big proponent of fastball split finger combinations. And we've just seen it with Radke and Viola and Santana and that's just Twins guys. I mean, you can go through both leagues and find guys that are tremendously successful with two main pitches. And he has a third one. He's got a slider. But for a guy that knows how to pitch, if he's healthy and commanding the fastball and the splitter, he could end up being the number three guy in the rotation for the Twins. I just think it's a very great, very good gamble for the Twins to take a shot. And the other thing it does, I was thinking about this the other day too. You know, we're coming off, 60-game schedule last year. I mean, nobody got really, stretched out at all. It's going to be interesting to see how they run spring training, how early in the season they're stretching guys out. I don't know what it would be like for pitchers. I have no idea. But you pitch 150 innings, and in some cases close to 200, but let's say 150, 160 innings, and then you pitch 60 innings. I mean, I don't know how many, Maeda, for example, pitched in a 60-game season, but it was significantly less than 150 or 180 or whatever. And so I don't know how that's going to affect their arms. I don't know how teams how conservative they'll be with guys as they try to get them back in shape for 162-game season. And I suspect that depth in the rotation down into the minor leagues is going to be really important. Guys that can pitch in the big leagues, but you're not going to use more than five. So you start with five guys and you have two guys in AAA at least that, if Shoemaker pitches great in spring training, it puts stress on Randy Dobnak, right? I think Dobnak, it can be a big league starter. The question is going to be, okay, which two of the three guys between Dobnak and Shoemaker and Jay Happ are going to be the ones coming out of spring training when Twins say, okay, these are our five guys. One of them is going to be out. If Happ and Shoemaker regain any kind of previous form, that probably makes Dobnak out, but it just means he's going to be lurking. He'll be close. He can go down and figure some things out and come back and be a starting pitcher if someone needs them. They might even go to six starters for all I know, but trying to get people back. So it's going to be interesting to see. I just think this addition is, again, a very low risk gamble for someone that could be really good for them. And not only that, add to the whole depth as they strengthen up to play 162 again.
And that's one thing, whenever I'm doing radio appearances or anything this time of the year, it's one thing I always remind people of is it's very easy to obsess about the 25-man day opening roster because it's symbolic and everybody gets introduced, right? It's fun. But the reality, especially these days, and especially the Twins do it with rest and being cautious with injuries and trying to give preventative rest even. I mean, the real major league roster is like 35 to 40 people, and your rotation is really going to end up being, it's going to be five people plus three to five replacements and extras and doubleheader starters, so you need more than five.
No question about it. You need more than five. You need, ideally, from a starter standpoint, you have eight guys, seven at least, going down in the minor leagues. And, it also, if Happ and Shoemaker are doing the job, maybe Dobnak stays in the big leagues and pitches, long relief out of the bullpen for a while. I mean, they're, as I said, six starter as they're being cautious, whatever it is, you need depth these days. There's no question about it. You need, and it also, you know, I know they really like Kalina, and I know they really like Duran, Balasovich. There are guys that they believe are going to pitch in the big leagues relatively soon. If it's not this year, certainly, you know, good chance next year. But some, you know, one or two of these guys might be lighting it up with the arms that they have down there in the minor leagues. And so, you know, we'll see. I mean, that depth is depth, and the transition starters to, you know, if you've got a real gem in the minor leagues, then, you know, having transition guys until the gem is ready is, you know, that can get you in the playoffs, you know, multiple years in a row.
Next week, I think we'll have some fun just talking about spring training, the nature of spring training. You and I have both spent a lot of time in Florida, you know, a big chunk of our lives down there. I'm going to ask you things like what your favorite spring training city is, your favorite facility you've seen or played in. We'll just kind of get into some spring training remembrances. We'll catch up on what the Twins are actually doing down there for today. And do you have any final thoughts, Roy, before I wrap up the show?
No, I don't think so. I think we've beaten all the horses that we need to beat up here today.
All right. Thanks to Roy. Thanks to our producer, Brandon Morton. A reminder, this is one of our many sports shows here at TalkNorth.com. We also have all the Ron Chera production shows over on the outdoor side of the network. On this side of the network, we have Roy, we have Cheryl Reeve, Michael Russo, Anthony LaPanta, John Krasinski, John Millay. It's a great lineup. We appreciate you listening, and we will be back next week.